at the Rising Billions. Disrupting tradition.
Always be closing.
Gaining exponential wisdom from street smart strategies.
I dream the kind of dreams that other people said would not be possible.
Free your mind. Nothing happens till something moves.
I'm a big fan of going all in on your strengths.
Create your blue ocean. Innovation and collaboration with competition.
Do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life? Or do you want to come with me and change the world?
Creating uncontested market space.
I worry that people don't tap into their strengths.
Wealth creation and a new economy entrepreneur.
There is a very thin dividing line between success and failure.
Witnessing unprecedented technology.
You can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Welcome to the Think Bold, Be Bold Show with Christopher Cumby and Alan Rich.
Hi, it's Christopher Cumby with Think Bold, Be Bold, here with my awesome co-host, Alan Witch. Alan, you in the house?
I'm in the house, having a fantastic day. Boy, are we on fire today. We have fortunate to have guests back to back to back. So right. We're right in the middle of it and excited and jazzed, and we have some great content coming forth right now.
Oh, I can agree. I couldn't agree, you know, anymore. And, you know, quite frankly, when we're launching these shows, you know, you and I usually go back and forth. We've done that now already, but I feel like we've got to throw some punches. What do you think?
I do. I agree. All right. Shuck and jive, man. Shuck and jive.
All right. How's the weather up there, brother?
Bad. Next.
Don't you want to ask me how the weather is?
Oh, sure. How's the weather where you are, Chris?
Oh, well, I'm at the beach, brother. It's all good. Seems to be our favorite.
Margaritaville, I think, is where you are.
Right? Margaritaville. Pretty close. I mean, Jimmy Buffett's sister has a place down here. It's called Lulu's. It's actually, you know, a hotspot, to tell you the truth. And nice. So it should be, because obviously that whole family is rocking it out in that arena. But I mean, I live close to actually Emerald, you know, bam, right?
Agassi.
Agassi has a couple restaurants in this area as well. And just an amazing guy, good friend with my friend who owns a barbecue place down here. So, you know, just awesome place to hang out and live. But, you know, you have to get around this, you know, beautiful country as well. And, you know, obviously I'm Canadian, so I come from the great white north, and it certainly is cold up there. So I'm happy to be down here right now, my friend.
Fantastic. Well, I'm glad you're able to take time out of your wonderful day to chat with us on the podcast today.
This is my wonderful day. I love doing this stuff, my friend. And, you know, we've got a great guest coming on. I can't wait to dive in. Yeah, actually very fortunate. You know, he's a busy man, and he's got a lot going on, but he took some time out to spend some time with us. And you know, I am feeling, you know, fortunate for that. So, Alan, without holding him up too much and, you know, getting right into it, let's do this, brother.
Absolutely. Talk about a media mogul. I'm going to toot his horn because I don't think he's going to toot his own horn. And which is part, really, his humility makes it an amazing company. I learned of this gentleman through his company, a company that I have followed for a lot of years. When I say a lot of years, I think it's three. So maybe that's a lot. Maybe it's not. For me, that's a long time. I have applied a number of the things that I've learned. I've learned and grown a lot personally through the efforts of this company, and have always wanted to be around it in some way, shape, or form, or be associated and contribute in some way, shape, or form, because that's the value behind this company, so to speak. But our guest today is a media mogul and a founder of a media company out of Boulder Media, but he's also the vice president of Foundation for a Better Life. For those, another term is values.com, and values.com sponsors and hosts a number of events globally. They also have a number of television commercials that you've seen, and it really is about fostering the best in humanity and making things better for everyone and acknowledging that and having that part of your life. And I don't want to steal any thunder, not that I could, and I'm probably not going to do it justice. So I want to bring in our guest today right off the bat here, get him going, and get his words of wisdom right from his lips. So without further ado, welcome Tom Brainerd to Think Bold, Be Bold.
Alan and Christopher, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm happy to talk with you guys. Your energy is fantastic, I will say, and I was just looking up here after, 90 episodes? I mean, your energy is not lost in repetition, so I love this.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you, Tom. Tom's in the house, everyone. And if we had an applause, we would do it. Alan, we've got to add that to the right? There we go.
There we go. That's sorry. I've only got two hands.
Right? That was our pathetic approach attempt at that, I should say. But listen, Tom, it is the thought. Tom, it's a real pleasure again, having you on, and can't wait to dive in. And, I want to probably rewind a little bit for you and certainly for our audience, a little bit about, where you came from and where did this, opportunity and things sort of foster and focus, your love and your passion and in this area, for it to grow and be part of a great team and all the things that you're working on. I know that's a lot, and a mouthful, but I'm just going to give you the floor just to walk us through, the highlights of your life and how it fostered itself into where you are today.
Foster is a good word. I think where I am now is to some extent full circle from perhaps where I started. Grew up in Denver, born and raised, which is where we're based right now, out of downtown Denver, and I went to school all the way through college, went to University of Colorado, and then went out to L.A. Halfway through college to work on a movie. I majored in communications or something, which basically means for me I had no idea what I wanted to do. And about halfway through, I got an opportunity to go out and work on a movie as a production assistant, which is basically a coffee getter, but did it and changed my life forever. It was a movie back in 1994. Five, which makes me feel old, but it was called Air Force One. It was a Harrison Ford movie.
I remember that.
Yeah, it's a good, solid traditional action flick for anybody who hasn't seen it. But anyway, I worked on that movie in L.A. as a production assistant for 3 or 4 months, and just caught the bug in a big way. So came back, switched my major to film, finished out, went straight back to L.A. in the fall of 99 and got an internship at a production company that at the time was starting up. It was called Crusader Entertainment, and it was being funded by a guy also out of Denver, a guy named Philip Anschutz, who was getting into the entertainment world at the time. So I worked there for, I think I honestly literally lived in a closet, not symbolically, literally lived in a closet for 15 grand a year. And read scripts for a living, and maybe racked up my credit card bill eating sushi. But I think I spent the next 7 or 8 years out in L.A. working my way up, and doing everything. I auditioned for roles as an actor. I wrote. I went on the productions that this company produced, and it was movies like Sahara and Ray and Chronicles of Narnia and all these things that were done over the course of that period of time from Crusader and another company that was a sister company called Walden Media. So I was in that world and just having a blast, but something fundamentally, I don't know if it was missing or not, but as you go through your 20s, you spend your time figuring out who you are. And I think that was where I did that. And out of all of that, it was something about the study of people and the human condition that I think became a bit of a through line. I grew up in kind of tough circumstances. I lost my dad when I was 6 years old, so I grew up, I was kind of a latchkey kid. And I think for a lot of people in that situation, you end up being very introspective and searching and maybe even introverted to some extent, which I am and was. And so as I went through this process in LA of this very fast-paced Hollywood sort of life, I began to see that although it's a roller coaster and the highs are wonderful, they were still yet unfulfilling to some extent. So at some point, I decided to actually move back to Denver, and this was about in 2008, I think, and try and figure out some semblance of life that didn't have me screaming at people, you know, being a full-fledged member of the Road Rage conglomerate in Los Angeles.
Right.
So I came back home and just tried to figure out sort of who I was, but also this thing that I loved about LA and the movie business and all of that, which was these were people and efforts that were really trying to bring about wonderful stories. And as a result of bringing about wonderful stories, hopefully give people an impression of inspiration or of something that would cause them a moment of introspection, something that would cause people to either want to do better or be inspired to some extent. And that was the thing that had me really interested about that industry and I suppose storytelling in general. So cut to, I don't know, a couple of years later, I ended up getting recruited into a company called National Cinemedia, which for those who don't know, it's kind of an obscure company, but it actually runs all of the advertising campaigns in movie theaters across the country. So anytime you see anything other than an actual movie itself in a movie theater, we were building those campaigns. And I'll be perfectly honest, when I showed up there, I was hired because they were trying to innovate the process of selling things in theater, frankly. And it's a traditional medium. It's a very old way to sell things. It's show an ad before a movie. That was becoming a little bit archaic, and they were feeling that and were trying to figure out how to access audiences in a way that would, you know, obviously benefit their bottom line. So I was part of a few people that got brought on to try and innovate that process in some fashion, which spoke directly to this idea of understanding people and what drove them to impulse decisions. What behavioral models could we study that we could find out where we could actually hit those touch points in people such that they would actually act on whatever we were selling, essentially. So over the next 4 or 5 years, we implemented things like putting Shazam in movie theaters, where you could use your mobile phone to listen to an ad and respond to something or get a coupon or interact with it at some level. A lot of retail experiences we would work on and really just study in what was essentially a closed system, a fully controlled sales environment. We could study how people interacted with big category brands, global brands. I mean, we were doing things for Pepsi and Coke and Google and Microsoft and Sony. So I got this wonderful experience in advertising that, frankly, I wasn't expecting. I just wanted to kind of tell stories and do things that would inspire people. But in doing that, we learned how to sell things, frankly, which was never my intention. I am not inherently a salesperson at all. I was doing some research on both of you before the call, and I in many cases, I wish I could have the energy for selling and closing and doing all those things that you guys are, and frankly, a lot of the guests on your show are incredible at doing. And I suck at that in many ways, to be honest with you. I was never the guy that was out there, generating those leads and relationships and closing the deals. I was always kind of I just wanted to be me and tell cool stories and kind of, I don't know, brood or whatever the term was, but anyway, out of doing that stuff at NCM, we garnered a huge amount of information on how people operate in environments where they're apt to buy something or react to something. So basically, out of doing that, it ran its tenure, and there came an opportunity a little over a year ago to begin working again with this organization called Foundation for a Better Life. And it is also a part of an extension of the Anschutz Corporation. It's funded out of that world, although we are totally agnostic to anything being religion, point of view, affiliation, anything at all. So anyway, for about a year ago, I started working and consulting here because they were facing a similar eventuality, which was they had become at the time the single largest public service campaign in history. And that's no small feat considering how many organizations are doing that.
Right.
And that consisted of primarily television commercials and billboards. But that extended beyond these borders to, I believe, 200 countries, and essentially to the extent at which it had been built to, I think last year we did about 25 billion impressions, if you bring it back into the ad world.
Billion.
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 I just wanted to say billion, Tom.
With a B, yeah. Conversely, I was running about, I think during my tenure at NCM, I ran about 13 billion impressions, which, which was significant. I mean, those are big ad buys, but this obviously is quite a bit larger than that. So, as I started consulting here, their charge to me was, we have this significant footprint. But it's a footprint in a system that is in itself experiencing innovation and to some extent is being outgunned by digital and social and all the things that occur on people's phones and computers. And so this place needed to go where those fish were and are. So that's why I came on board in a consulting capacity at first. Out of the things that we had done at NCM and frankly pulling from significantly from the experiences that I had in the entertainment industry, which was a purified place of storytelling. So putting those two skill sets together and placing them here, the question became, how can we take what we do, which, as you said, was telling inspiring stories through TV commercials and on billboards. Most people in this country have seen them in one place or another. But we need to now take that into a new place, which is online, meaningfully, and access new audiences, which essentially becomes the millennial demographic to some extent, although there is a debate to be had, certainly from me, as to identifying people by an age group is almost archaic in itself.
Sure.
But and so I think what we now had to do is figure out how to do that. So over the last year, we have been putting out content, but it's content that had already been produced, and we've been almost in a skunk works of developing a new way of being. Which, by the way, has not been released yet. So we are pre-release of all of this. So some of this I'll be able to talk about and some not that you'll be able to see very soon. But we have been reworking the way that we do things with two very important tasks. One, retain the literal foundation, the true foundation of who we are, the thing that brought us to this point now. And also iterate to create a more authentic, transparent, personal engagement level experience for the people that may not know us yet or for the people that we're trying to reach who do know us but don't interact with us in any way. So it's now going from a bullhorn to two-way media. So that's the preamble and the long story for who I am and where we are now. And literally what we are up to that is going to be released literally within weeks and months, and certainly all through this year is going to be a whole new iteration of all of that. And there's a lot of ad advertisement and sales skill sets in there, but it comes from much more of a narrative angle. And so that's kind of what we're up to.
I love it. That sounds like a lot, and
that sounds like a lot.
And, you know, but just to observe, you know, again, for our audience, what you brought to the table, you know, initially through consulting was a lot of experience, you know, and transferable skill, it sounds, so that then you can take that information and help, you know, guide where the company needed to go, you know, next and what you guys are doing. And I love the fact that you, you know, use the word skunkworks, because I can't wait, first of all, obviously, to see what happens or comes out. And I'm just, you know, completely impressed. Tom, you've got so much great knowledge and, you know, you land it where you need it to land right now. And I just love it. Alan, what do we have for Tom?
I want to put Tom on the hot seat. For
hot seat, hot seat.
Ding, ding. Do we need that little bell?
Ding. Yeah.
Like my classroom. But I don't think it's going to be a hot seat for Tom, but let's pretend just a second that I'm new. I've never heard of, you know, Foundation for a Better Life or values.com. I haven't seen the commercials, mainly because I've been outside playing in the rapids. What impression do you want to leave upon me? What do you want me to know? What's the first thing you want? What's the aha moment you want me to get as a new viewer?
The world is full of brands and companies that want to get at you for whatever reason they want to get at you. They want to sell you something, which is not wrong. It's part of how the world works. Part of those tactics can be trying to inspire you through content that makes you become affectionate towards that brand. And again, nothing wrong with that. That's how it works. But imagine there's a place and a source of content that asks nothing from you out of watching what it produces other than to simply be inspired, remember the value that you represent and the things and the power that you can represent in this world.
Huh. Great.
Fantastic.
Yeah, right?
That's really
powerful. I'm just going to interject at this point.
You can make up words. I made words up on the
I know, you're making... that's what happens, Alan, when I hang out with you. I start making, you know, shit up. You know, words like inspired are such a powerful word, and I agree. And you've been around this industry, you know, from big movie stuff to what you're doing now and, you know, advertising and marketing and things like that. You know, with social media being as new as it is, because let's face it, it's still fairly new. And you know, the world's moving in different, you know, a massive, fast direction. Everybody is now, you know, pretty much a publisher. They can do whatever they want, tell about their life. They can create things. Your view on social media as the future nears, and I'll give you a little perspective on, you know, what I think, and just love to, you know, understand what you see happening, since you're involved in, you know, some massive changes and things like that. But the way I see it, you know, with Facebook and let's say, you know, the big ones, Instagram and Twitter and so forth. And I know there's a, you know, whack-a-mole of others out there that are growing and probably ones we don't even know yet.
That's a fun game, by the way, whack-a-mole.
Whack-a-mole. Yeah,
that's a great visual for that.
there's a lot of stuff, you know, out there. So social media, you know, the way it's progressing. And I saw this happen with Twitter. It's like all of a sudden it's becoming a broadcast. You know, they did it with football, right? So, you know, my view is that, and with live, you know, Facebook, everybody can just get on now and, you know, just talk and show their life and do whatever, you know, it's perspective, right? You know, viewing through the eyes of someone else. And I think that's intriguing for a lot of people. I see a lot of creativeness around that. Where do you see that happen? Like, what's the future of like social media? Is there something beyond social media that we don't even, you know, I haven't even thought about yet or even thought, you know, maybe there's something else. I'd love to get your perspective on it because you're, you know, you're in this world. You're surrounded with this stuff and it'd be great to understand from your viewpoint or vantage point, what do you expect in the years to come?
It's a hugely relevant question, and I think obviously I deal with this every day because it, you know, part of it keeps you up at night, hoping that you're at minimum keeping up, if not getting ahead.
Staying relevant.
You don't. I mean, to stay relevant is one thing. To actually innovate in this day and age is another matter entirely.
Sure.
And I think two things stick out for me so far in my career, and it comes from basically the ad world and the entertainment world, which arguably could be the same thing. The human condition will always rule the day, and out of that, to convey that, the one thing that can't be commoditized is talent. In this day and age of Facebook Live, Instagram stories, Snapchat, whatever, like you said, the whack-a-mole of social media. There's a great line in the movie The Incredibles that says, "When everybody's special, no one is." And that's always stuck out to me because if everybody gets on the bus, then all of a sudden it becomes commoditized, right? Everybody is showing you what meal they ate or what, you know, thing that they're up to or you know, whatever they think is special at the time, right? At a certain point, it crosses a divide and hits a tipping point of all of that becomes unspecial again, to make up a word. And so I think that gives you some of those bubbles that we experience. Like you said, Twitter is now basically just almost a broadcast medium, and I think you know, obviously Trump is kind of at the head of that in many ways, given what he really did last year.
And redirect that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and obviously the upswing of companies like that have gotten a lot steeper. I saw a great chart the other day of the growth metrics of companies over time, and things like, you know, CBS News or networks of traditional media, their growth charts versus Snapchat, and even Facebook versus Snapchat. When I came back to Denver and was getting into social media at the time, 06, 08, that was just growing and had a relatively steep growth curve for the time. But then you look, you know, cut to 5 years later in Snapchat, it started out basically as a sexting app. And
right. Yeah.
And 9 months later, its growth is so pronounced that it basically shatters all records of what that looks like. Uber, same thing, the fastest growing company in history. So I think when these things, the faster they grow, to some extent, the harder they can fall, right? Because those things can become commoditized and become uncool more quickly, which happens a lot in mobile gaming. And so these companies that get really big, if they're resting on their laurels too long, can become obsolete very, very quickly. So I think when it comes back to this notion of social media, people who can be on trend with, you know, sharing the insights of their day to their peer group or to the public at large, that's fine. And there are people on those trends, and it will go its own way. But the fundamentals to me will always stick out. The people that will garner the most engagement, followers, whatever it is on Instagram, YouTube, whatever, will at some level be able to access people's human condition more effectively than others. PewDiePie, the very famous tuber, YouTube gamer that just basically plays video games and people watch him on YouTube, I think he was making $7 million a year on ad revenue from people watching YouTube pieces that he's done on YouTube. He was able to access his peer group, his cohort group that was watching him in a way that obviously other people weren't. So for whatever reason, whether it be raw talent or not, he stood out as let's just say special among a crowd of people that were trying to do the exact same thing but weren't able to do it. So it just brings me back to whatever is going on, which is very relevant here at the foundation, by the way. If we just try and stay on trend and go wherever the wind is blowing, then we're going to be just like everybody else, and sure. And when everybody's special, nobody is. So the fundamentals have to remain in place. Who are we at our core, such that we can access the human condition and convey these stories with a sense of honesty and leverage the talent that will keep us rooted, so that no matter what is going on in social media, television, newspapers, it doesn't matter. We're going to stay relevant because we're able to access the humanness that ultimately gets at people.
Makes a ton of sense now that you outlined it like that. It just gave me so much clarity and perspective on that. So thanks. It was like,
yeah,
definitely. I love your perspective and viewpoint on that. So thanks for sharing that, Alan.
I want to jump in here. Thanks for the intro, Chris. Appreciate that.
Always, my brother. Always.
It's been
always.
One of those days. I want to make sure.
Hey, listen. I want to make sure you didn't fall asleep, right?
Well, you know, yeah, I am the oldest guy on the show today.
That is true,
so,
Alan.
You know, I want to make sure that my cane is next to me, and I do have some some insurer on my nightstand here.
All right.
So, you know, we're ready to roll. No, I Tom, we're talking. I love the fact that you're talking about the impression on society. And the way you're actually, if I understand it, hoping to change behavior. Have you guys, and maybe you can't share this, and please let us know if you can't, have you found a way to tag or monitor or predict or track the effectiveness of the behavior that you're wanting to elicit to the public? Have you guys found a way to track that or see trends change based upon your mission? And if so, is that one of the constant value guides for you, or is that, where does that fall on the priority level, I guess, of where you're going?
Maybe at the top. I think I have never been in the military, although I am enamored of those who have, but I've certainly read my share of books and am humbled by the people who go into the military, and specifically, even if you read books about those who have been in some sort of special forces or kind of smaller groups within the military, a driving principle that you find there is this notion of situational awareness. And not to make military analogies here, but the idea that that success on a mission or in life or in business can depend on your ability to understand what's going on in a room, or in this case, what's going on with your audience, can be maybe the most important trained, inherent to some extent, but also trained skill that you can and try and hone, I think. So for us, this idea that traditionally in television, you'd put an ad out there and Nielsen would tell you, based on a sample set of, let's say, roughly 2,500 households, that you fared a certain way on a certain night during a certain hour, and that was about it. That was poor situational awareness all in. And by the way, an entire advertising industry relied on that for many, many years.
Right.
Now, because of the advent of digital and social media, and by the way, if you Google, politics aside, if you Google the way that the Trump campaign versus the Clinton campaign handled metrics like these during the campaign, mm-hmm. it is absolutely fascinating to see the comparison there. But if you look at the way that we can do this now, the ability of our situational awareness to be heightened is almost infinite. The data that we can glean from the engagement that we see online out of the things that we put out there can give you a sense of who people are, and not just who they are, but what they respond to. And this is what we had worked on at NCM. Because it was such a great closed environment, a network that we could fully control, we could put something out there, show it to people, monitor exactly how they behaved, and thereby learn and sort of, well, in that case, begin to learn, because when we started, social media was, let's face it, in its infancy, we began to learn along with everybody else that we could see into people's lives. And when you do that and you start to understand what drives people to buy things, where they go, who they talk with, what they eat, you can begin to derive habits and tendencies out of that that you can then extrapolate and assign to other behaviors so that when you're building a creative campaign, whether it be for a brand or in our case simply to inspire people, all of a sudden we're sitting on a database that when looked at in a certain way can tell you exactly what these people are hungry for. And when you have that, and that's why I say that the notion of millennials to me is suspect, because it's not an age thing, it's a behavior thing.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Right.
When you look at what people's behaviors are telling you, you can see what they want in their lives, what they're hungry for. And if you're really good, and hopefully we'll be this way, if you're really good, you can begin to anticipate and forecast what they're going to want, which is almost a holy grail. And out of doing so, assign creative, build campaigns, and distribute content that will get at people's heartstrings and cause them to do something that perhaps they weren't even aware that they wanted to do. And that's a big deal. That's a huge milestone step that technology provides, frankly, but allows us to do things that, again, in our case, are simply trying to make the world a better place.
Interesting. I love that.
There's a lot of responsibility there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Hey, I got a question.
I mean, it's scary, but at the same time, it's kind of beautiful, you know?
Right.
It is beautiful. It's a very, very nice way to say that. It is a beautiful thing to watch, almost like watching a flower blossom. All the environments have to be right for this thing to grow and to be. Not to be something different, just to be what it is.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, you're providing an environment for that. That's very magical and very honorable.
Yeah. Well, we hope so.
It's very beautiful. Mm-hmm. I've got a question for you, Tom.
Shoot.
Alive or dead, who would you like to have dinner with and hang out with and maybe have a, you know, after dinner espresso? Who would that be?
Well,
besides me, of course.
First you, and then
and then me. We got that out of the way.
First one of you, and then the other, and then
great positioning.
And then I would say probably my dad.
I love it.
Guys are going to cause me to cry, but that doesn't happen to the show.
I feel good. I feel a good chill right now. So let's carry on.
It's hard to quantify, you know, who you are as a result of a parent when your parent isn't around. And so to some extent, I can only guess, you know, what traits come from my dad, and to be able to sit down with him for an espresso or a beer or whatever it is. I've actually dreamed of that, I'll be honest with you. And I think, you know, it's an honor for those who still have their parents around to have that reflection of who they are and their elders, and to be able to sort of gain wisdom from that. So it would be my dad.
Great answer. What a chill came over me, and in fact, you helped me think about, you know, the fact my parents are both around, you know, fortunately, and just something that you just said that, you know, I think we take a lot of things for granted, you know, that others don't necessarily have, whether it's, you know, our parent or something else. And I certainly think, you know, the attitude of gratitude for what you do have is so important. But great answer. Great chill came over me. So thanks, Dad, for being here.
I'll give you an exclusive insight into something that we're up to this year, which is, well, very much along these lines, because gratitude, even when you look at the psychology of it, if you are feeling gratitude, you actually don't have the capability to have an emotion of sadness at the exact same moment, which is a really interesting concept. But if the gratitude, if you think for a moment about what value that you represent, that you are, is the most important to you, the next question usually becomes, well, where'd you get it? And most oftentimes that comes from your parents. And then maybe even as importantly, it then becomes, if you know that and if you have gratitude for that, that then can enable you to take that quality in yourself and hand it off to the next person down the road. And that is a theme that will be of paramount importance to us this year and probably for a long time as we at the foundation do our thing.
Like a pay it forward type of theme.
Very much so. Yeah.
Beautiful, powerful.
Yeah.
Great,
yeah.
Great answer and great perspective. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, it is a great answer. And you know, my dad's gone and my stepdad's gone, and you know, those are two people in my life that has meant a lot, that have been able to do a lot. But you know, now I have that role with my son. And so looking back onto, you know, the wisdom that I'll use the word wisdom for the lack of a better word that was passed down to me, harboring that now and knowing that if I don't pass that on, it dies with me, right?
That's right.
My dad's wisdom and so forth and my stepdad's wisdom dies with me if I don't pass it on. And I would imagine that the good things that you find, the behavioral, you know, in the behavioral economics of your studies, if you don't pass those things on, there's an obligation there. And I see that obligation, even though that may not be the word that's used, I see that great desire in what you're doing to be able to not only identify that, but to pass that on in hopes that, one, that it's going to be passed on, and two, that it will elicit a value equal to or greater than what it came in with.
Appreciate
and that's not always the case in human, you know, transaction. It doesn't always, it isn't always the case. There's always an ulterior motive outside of, once again, that flower, just being that flower, being the best thing that it can be. And so once again, I honor you guys for doing that. But I have a question for you, and it has to do with Chris and I, and I guess in part this podcast, as you folks are reaching forward in the social media landscapes and beyond, whatever that connection might be, how can Chris and I and our podcast, and I would even say our business platforms, how can we assist and greater grow or be a part of your mission?
Well, first of all, that's it's a kind thing that you have that as part of your business plan, as it were, for this podcast and everything you do, because I think that is the pay it forwardness of what you guys are up to. So I acknowledge you for that, but I would also say that, as I said before, our ROI here is inspiration. So when we promote the things that we're doing, our only ask is that those who are somehow influenced by what we're up to can take a moment and reflect and perhaps do something good or inspire someone else as a result. So when you talk about what can you do, which again I really appreciate, it's simply to have us in mind when things like that come up, and hopefully if we do our jobs right this year in Bond, will become a more integral resource for people to point to as a source of inspiration. So if you're out there in the world and somebody tells you that they're having a rough day or that something is happening in their life that's difficult, maybe we become top of mind as a quote that you heard from us or a commercial that gave you inspiration or something like that. And that's all I ask, honestly. There is no other metric that we need. Yes, we do want to measure these things to know how we're doing and to get better at it, but essentially if the net positive product of the world increases even by a decimal of a percentage point as a result of our work, then we will have done our job. So that's our only ask.
I love it. Well, you certainly got it. And I'm certainly going to, you know, point people to that, because I just love the inspired life. You know, I think that, you know, more people should be inspired and find that inspiration within them to motivate themselves to go do some other things that'll help others. So appreciate
everybody,
that.
Of course. And everybody has a right to want to jump out of the bed in the morning and go do what they love to do. Everybody has that right. And sometimes it can take a tremendous amount of work. It certainly has for me. And I'm sure it has for you. And you're lucky if it doesn't. And I would argue that you're maybe even better off if it was difficult. But everybody has that right. And all we're here to do is try and give you a little bit more energy as you do jump out of bed in the morning. That's all.
Fantastic.
A very worthy ideal.
Right?
Yeah.
A very worthy ideal. And I think, you know, having your organization be a part of everyone's organization, having that characteristic, being a honest and transparent piece of how they operate, that I think is a big value add to the community in general. And I think that social media, if we all, you know, take on this charge of truly adopting that, then I think that is a huge win. But just knowing about, you know, the Foundation for a Better Life and values.com and understanding the pay it forward and the appreciative aspects of life as a part of a company's DNA or an individual's DNA is a very worthwhile ideal. And we will definitely do what we can on an ongoing basis to not only foster that in our endeavors, but to make that a visual and a present piece of what we talk about as a value that we hold true, so that people not only hear us talk, but they see in our actions that we honor that. And I think if we can do that, if we can help do that, then that's a win-win.
Absolutely.
I think you're right. And I will tell you, so much so, we are of that mindset, so much so that actually part of this effort that will happen very soon is there will be a rebranding of sorts to passiton.com, because that is the essence of our DNA. So values.com is becoming passiton.com as we speak. And that will reflect the very core of everything we do, and again, that is our only ask.
I love it. Well, we'll certainly be ambassadors to that, and share the information out there, because again, I believe in, you know, raising vibration by the people and the association of the likes of what you guys are doing. So certainly you have our support, and we'll be certainly paying attention as things carry on.
Thank you.
Hey, Alan. Yes, absolutely, my friend. Alan, you know, the show, as we mentioned right at the beginning, it flies and it goes fast.
Yeah, I'm looking at this clock and it keeps ticking.
I know, it keeps ticking. It's one of those things. But we have to respect Tom's time, and we really appreciate all the golden nuggets. And again, for our audience, I hope you're taking notes as fast as I've been taking notes, because I have so many, right? I have so many golden nuggets that Tom shared with us. Just as reminders again, and you know, that, you know, life's about what you make it. And, you know, for me, every day is a good day, every day is a great day, and every day can be a better day. It's just, you know, again, what you want to do to bring your awareness to whatever it is that's going on. And certainly challenges happen. Like, listen, you mentioned it, Tom, it's not every day you can just jump out of bed. It takes work to be excited. And but I'll tell you, it takes way more work to be not excited. So the way I look at it is, it's just one of those things. I enjoy, you know, being part of and being around, and that's why we do this show, is to pass it, you know, and pay it forward as well. But pass it on. I love that. Passiton.com. I'm looking forward to seeing all that change, and change is good. Change is really great. Alan, what else do we have for Tom as we approach, not quite, but we're approaching near the end?
We're approaching this last question, but we're not going to let it fly yet. contribution and transparent transaction between, you know, from an economical standpoint, usually historically has disassociated behavior and you know, personal value and interpretation and belief. But I think that, well, I don't think I know that it just by being in the system, as we move forward, it's going to be even more important to be transparent in one's dealings. Whatever those dealings might be, they might be for economical gain, they might be just as a contribution. For those that don't necessarily, or maybe this is a new topic for some. I don't know that's the case, but maybe it is. And if it is, if this is a new topic for someone, Tom, how would you encourage them to make this something that is a core responsibility in their organization that may or may not elicit, you know, an equal economic gain? Why would this be something that they'd want to interject? Just playing the devil's advocate.
It's a very good question. I think, you know, in a pure sales environment, questions like that can be very difficult to answer because, you know, I have worked in public and private companies, and in public companies, for example, it can be very hard to justify things like what we've been talking about because the short-term realization of those can be minimal. When you have to report quarterly on sales figures, mm-hmm. and you're up to something strategic like let's be transparent, let's be authentic, let's you know, get to the core of our DNA, those things don't show up on a balance sheet on a quarterly basis.
Right.
And that can be a difficult thing to justify. But long term, and this is something I know from working here and in my career and even with the people that support us, like people within the Entries Corporation, AEG, all of those kinds of companies who are very, very successful, they focus on the fundamentals and the long-term return. The short-term can come and go, but the long-term return is what really wins the day. And in the long-term, things like authenticity and transparency and honesty will always win. May not feel like it, but when handled truthfully, those things are infallible and can take some trust to try and adhere to those when you're under certain pressures, specifically in sales. But those things will always win the day and are infallible. And that's the only answer I can think of that can help that question, because it's a very tough question, especially in with people who have to show results in near terms.
Sure.
Well, I'm glad you answered it the way you did, because I think that really is the key answer. I think it's a matter of it's about character, and it's about you know, it's about pride, not pride in your results, but pride in how you operate. And I think it is transparency. And you know, you talked about it in the very beginning, stories sell, and I don't necessarily mean stories sell for an economic gain. Stories sell in that they move people's behaviors. And the more honest and transparent that a story can be, the more it's going to elicit that. Yes, there could be motivational stories that are fabricated to create a specific response, and that's not something new to the marketplace. But I think the more transparent that people are, the more transparent the companies are, the more the consumer will relate to them and want to participate and become a part of that. See, when I first started hearing about Foundation for Better Life and values.com, I just wanted to be a part of it. And if that meant that I just listened to it, great. If that meant that I could take some of what I learned and you know, dive it into my DNA as how I operate, better yet, that's my pay it forward piece. But I think the more we grow as individuals, the more we grow as companies, with a transparent approach to here's how we got here, here's the value that we offer, that you know, see us for that. I think that is a great way to go, albeit probably, you know, with great resistance maybe now in a lot of markets, but I see that waning. And I just love the fact that you said that ultimately it's kind of the right thing to do. We hope that you do it.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, I look at it you know, two ways as well, you know, just from another perspective, that you know, your strategy is your why, that's your long term. It's what we charge everything back to. So, you know, as transparency, honesty, and, you know, contribution back into the social part of life for big companies, whether you're public or private, that's a long-term strategy. That's your why, you know, what you're looking for. And then tactical, which relates to your sales, is the how we do things every day. And, you know, I think that that both play a part and, you know, certainly can be married up. You know, it takes a little bit more effort, to your point, Tom, you know, in a public company to justify some of those things. But, you know, the hows, you know, short term, because I've been in sales as well, you know, can be married up to that strategy, you know, long term, and, you know, why. So, you know, again, the how and why are important. I think the why in life is the most important. But, you know, at the end of the day, we do need to, you know, maneuver, if you want, through life and pivot where we need to. But I think there's definitely a way to do that. In fact, that's what I work on, you know, working with a lot of clients that I, you know, get on the front lines with to help, you know, focus on the sales, bring in the numbers, you know, meet the objectives, but also, you know, line that up accordingly to, you know, where the strategy needs to go long term. So it's not easy, but it's, you know, it is a simple philosophy, but, you know, they're totally two different things. Yeah. Anyway, amazing. Tom, you're stacked with knowledge. I can hang out with you all day, brother. I thought we were going on for 4 hours. But yeah, you only gave us like 1 hour. You gave us 1 hour. That's it. That's all we get. But I hope we stay, you know, definitely contact. We'd love to come back, have you come back on the show if you would. We're going to have a live show, and we're going to actually elicit some phone calls in. We're going to be making some phone calls out with some promotion around that, knowing that, you know, the guest's coming on. So we want to make the conversation go a little bit bigger. Would you be open to doing that later on in the year as you get through some of the big projects?
Yeah, I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, you heard it right here, folks. We got Tom on recording that he's going to be coming back on. So I'm super stoked. Alan, always great pleasure. Tom, you're amazing. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you guys. You're amazing as well. This has been great.
we're gonna quote you on that. Can you say that again?
Please do. Yes, I'll do it for you.
Fantastic.
In post,
yeah.
There you go. Anything you want.
I love it. Alan, always great pleasure, my friend.
Likewise. It's been an honor today, both to host, to be working with you know, with my best buddy, and to have you on, and to be able to share and be a vessel for you to speak through. It is an honor, and we honor the guests, the people that are on the show, but most importantly, the listeners, people that sure. Whose ears we try to populate. Sure. And on that note, we just want to say thank you.
Awesome. Well, passiton.com. Look for it, folks. You know, in the meantime, values.com, Foundation for a Better Life. Look up Tom. He's pretty transparent himself. You can find him in LinkedIn. It's a great place as well. So, hey, audience, you guys are amazing, and I just wanted to say thank you. So keep listening in. Let us know what your thoughts are. info@thinkboldbebold.com, and we'll certainly get back to you. We appreciate all the comments and the emails you sent through. So thank you very much. And it wouldn't be a show without me saying, do something nice for someone today.